I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State is trying to make an example out of schools that speak up in support of protecting girls. Plus, Seattle Redditors think I should die for exposing the realities of an extreme abortion amendment being pushed by Democrats. And it's been a few weeks, but the media is finally catching up on Dow Constantine and Sound Transit's troubling cronyism. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, friends. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, per the usual, like every day, jam-packed show for you. I do want to start with an update to the saga that's been unfolding in the Tumwater School District ever since we had Francis Stout on the show, the JV basketball player who has now made headlines across the country because she refused to play in her final game of the year because there was a boy playing on the other team. And we did in-depth interviews with both Francis and her mom and also the transgender athlete from the other team, Andy and Andy's dad. And so since then, as you know, it's been picked up by Libs of TikTok. It's been in the New York Post. Francis and her mom were on Fox and Friends. And so there's been so much happening behind the scenes in this. And I'll just go over just a little bit of it. So after Francis had refused to play, the Tumwater School District announced it was investigating her for bullying and harassment because she called the other player a man. To his face. And so that was happening. Then it got some national attention. The Tumwater School District turned around, the school board rather, and voted in favor of protecting girls' sports, which I thought was a positive development from the entire ordeal. There was only one member that voted against it. And basically what the school board said is it is in support of two amendments that are currently under consideration by the WIAA. That is the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association. And it is the governing body of Washington athletics in our high schools. And they have two amendments, amendments 7 and 8. Both of them in different ways would ban biological boys from competing in girls' sports. And so we're sort of waiting to see what happens with the WIAA amendments. So all of that was going on. And then the U.S. Department of Education, likely because of the national attention that Francis's case got, announced that it has launched a federal civil rights investigation into violations of Title IX into the Tumwater School District, which, as I said at the time, I think they should just be investigating Washington State. Because the decision to allow boys to compete against girls, to allow boys to be in girls' spaces, that is a decision coming from the very, very tippy top, from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichdahl. And they are very committed because they have a twisted interpretation of Title IX. It's the twisted interpretation that the Biden administration has, that they have twisted what was intended to protect girls and to protect women from discrimination into protecting biological boys and their ability to be treated just like girls. And so across Washington State, it is the rules now of the WIAA, but also of OSPI, that students can compete in athletics that align with their preferred gender, whether they've had surgeries or not, whether they've taken hormones or not. If you wake up one day and you say, I'm a girl, and you decide you want to compete in athletics, you can compete as a girl. And that is a state public school policy. So we have an update today. The Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction has sent a threatening letter to the Tumwater School Board for its really symbolic vote to say we support protecting girls' spaces. So it's a two-page letter. I won't read the whole thing, but the general gist of it is you need to watch your back. That's how I would characterize this letter. It's a threat, make no mistake. And it's already found its way to other superintendents. They're spreading it around. I think what OSPI is trying to do is to make an example of the Tumwater School Board for standing up for girls. And they're basically saying that you could put yourselves in legal peril for doing this, that it's discrimination to stand up for girls and to exclude transgender athletes or biological boys from girls' spaces. They say it's a violation of state law. They also say in here, which is sort of interesting, that they say it's a violation of federal discrimination laws, which, not under Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been pretty clear that in his in the way that they're handling in the federal government, Title IX is not meant to allow boys to compete against girls. And Donald Trump has been very clear in his executive order that girls' spaces need to be protected. But so this letter, I think, does two things. It is an effort to make an example out of the Tumwater School Board, and basically to say, if there's anyone sane enough to stand up for girls, we're going to put you on blast and we're going to come after you. But it's also Washington State and Chris Reichdahl continuing to plant their flag to say, we will not listen to the Trump administration. We will continue to violate President Donald Trump's executive order, and we're committed to doing that. And I think it's interesting in this letter, and I've posted it across social media if you want to read the full thing, I think it's interesting how twisted they are when it comes to who they're interested in protecting, what amounts to discrimination. Because again, in all of this, and I would say in all of the debates around girls' sports, et cetera, nobody cares about the girls. Nobody in government seems to care about the girls and the impact that it has on girls. It's all about protecting this sliver of a population of people where there's a very sound argument to be made that they should be playing in the sport that aligns with their biological gender. I want to read this quote from the letter. So again, it goes on basically shaming them for just taking this symbolic vote, like, hey, we don't want boys and girls spaces, right? And also they CC'd on the letter, I should note, the executive director, Mick Hoffman, of the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association, because in the letter they're basically saying, you know, the board can't tell WIAA what to do and shouldn't tell WIAA what to do. And then it has this quote, OSPI is also concerned that the board's resolution may have a chilling effect on the rights of all students, including transgender and gender expansive students, to participate in the district's athletic programs and activities. So again, where is the care or concern for the girls? There is literally none from OSPI. Could have a chilling effect. Transgender athletes and gender expansive. Like, what is gender expansive? It's just, I don't know what I am today. Like, I am, gender is a social construct. And I will,
whatever.
And so that is the singular concern of OSPI, is transgender and gender expansive students. I have never heard Chris Reichdahl utter one word of care or concern for the frustrations of female athletes, who far outnumber the transgender athletes. And I feel like that's something that's underappreciated by the legacy media. You know, the legacy media doesn't like to touch on these issues as it is. I think they're sort of like, it's too touchy. People are going to get mad at us, so we're just not going to discuss it, right? But when they do discuss it, they never really want to focus on the legitimate concerns of females and how, if you're talking about an issue of fair and unfair, and this is unfair to transgender athletes, this makes them feel a certain way and excluded or whatever it is, what about girls? Who's going to fight for girls? Not Chris Reichdahl, not Washington State. So I think this letter and the threat to the Tumwater School Board, and that's how I see it. It's like, watch your back. We don't want you standing up for girls. I think this should just be another red flag alarm for Donald Trump and the U.S. Department of Education to come after our school, a public school system as a whole. I don't know that it does much good to have a civil rights investigation into the Tumwater School District, considering the school board actually has taken a stand in favor of girls. And they're just following basically what's mandated to them from the top. So the federal government needs to come in and investigate OSPI. I do believe that Chris Reichdahl should be recalled. I do believe that someone, a parent with standing, ought to, I mean, everyone has standing because we all pay into the public school system with property taxes, et cetera. But I think a parent with standing should start a recall effort into Chris Reichdahl, because right now he's in violation of Title IX, the actual interpretation of Title IX. He's in violation of Donald Trump's executive order, and he is putting at risk federal funding that comes to our public schools, and that will have an impact on public schools. I think that you can meet the legal threshold for a recall of Chris Reichdahl at this point. And I would like to see a parent or a parent's group do it. But I really hope that the Tumwater School Board does not back down, that it's not threatened by this letter, and that it continues to stand up for girls, and that other districts do the same. We were just told this morning, after I had pushed out this on social media, that this is not the first district to get a letter just like this from OSPI. There was another school district a few months back that had also stood up for girls and signaled that they don't want boys participating in girls' athletics. And they told us about an hour ago, they got a very similar letter from OSPI basically saying, don't do that. Don't stand up for girls. You're discriminating against students. So we need school districts, school boards, anyone who's taken the same position on this to stand their ground with the knowledge that you have a lot of people in your corner, including the president of the United States, talking about more shenanigans in our schools and with parenting. So I actually want to start, Nicole, if we can leapfrog a little bit. Tomorrow is decision day when it comes to the parental bill of rights. So as you know, there's been this ongoing effort to undo the parental rights initiative. As long as we're talking about relationships with schools, et cetera, there's been this ongoing effort to undo the parental bill of rights that was passed via voter initiative about a year ago. And so there's a bill on the Senate side, and there's also a bill on the House side. And you guys know by now what these do. It would basically strip out all the key provisions of the parental bill of rights. It's House Bill 1296. So it's got some differences to the Senate version, but does essentially the same thing. All the reasons we supported the parental bill of rights, saying parents are the primary stakeholders in their kids' lives, and parents have a right to know what's going on with their kids in school, and parents have a right to know if their child's been prescribed medication at school or whatever it is, or is showing up at school and Tommy is being called Tammy and says that he's a different gender at school than he does at home. Parents have a right to know that stuff. Like that's critical, right? And so what this bill, House Bill 1296, does is it strips all the important stuff away. And it basically gives a big middle finger to any parents who signed the parental rights initiative and any parent who thinks that they have a right to know what's going on with their kids at school. So the reason I say tomorrow is decision day. So let me kind of explain the cutoffs and how they work in the legislature. So you already know, and we've talked about the Senate version of this bill. So that passed out of the Senate, but it's been languishing. So it was referred to the House Education Committee, and the House Education Committee hasn't given it a hearing. Why is that? Well, when you have two different bills like this and there's a little bit of variation, the chambers get sort of possessive. And the Senate wants its version to become law. And the House Democrats want their version to become law. So the House Democrats, and this is what I've been told is happening behind the scenes, which might work out to our benefit. The House Democrats have said, we're not going to move the Senate bill. So that's why it's languishing in that House Education Committee. And the Senate Democrats have said, well, we're not going to move the House version of this bill because we like our version of the bill better. They both suck, but we like our version of the House of the bill better. So if this bill from the House makes it over to the Senate, they're saying they're not going to move on it. So it's sort of a weird stalemate, which is good, right? I love a stalemate in this situation. So what we have right now and tomorrow is a key cutoff in Olympia. Tomorrow is the House of Origin cutoff. And what that means is if a bill does not advance out of its house of origin, so if it's a Senate bill, if it hasn't moved out of the Senate, if it's a House bill and it hasn't moved out of the House, and it has no key impact on the budget, it's dead for the session. So tomorrow, we're told that House Democrats are going to try to, in the evening, bring House Bill 1296 for a vote. So if they do not pass it out of the House tomorrow, then it's dead because it doesn't meet the House of Origin cutoff. Now, even if they do tomorrow evening at the very, very last minute before the House of Origin cutoff, even if they do pass House Bill 1296 to dismantle the Parental Bill of Rights, remember, the Senate has already said, well, we like our version better. So if the House sends their bill over to the Senate and the Senate's like, we're not doing anything with it because you didn't move our bill because the Senate version's been languishing in the House. Well, you know what that means for us? Hell, if they want to get into this infighting on the Democrats about what way of dismantling parental rights is better, by all means, fight away. And then they just sort of fade into obscurity and they don't go anywhere. And that would be a best case scenario. I mean, obviously, we don't want House Bill 1296 to pass out of the House tomorrow. That would be ideal. So we're going to be putting out another action alert today after the show with just a reminder for those who haven't already to email their elected leaders ahead of what we anticipate will be floor movement on this tomorrow to say you do not support 1296 and you support keeping the Parental Bill of Rights intact. Now, let's say none of this works and Democrats get it together and they say, all right, send us over the House version of the bill and we'll pass it in the Senate. Well, that's okay, too. Because as you know, we have an initiative, thanks to Let's Go Washington, that is ready to go today. We talked about it on the show a couple weeks ago. The Let's Go Washington has already pre-filed an initiative that will seek to repeal 5181 if the Senate version of the bill is the one that moves forward. If it's the House version of the bill, then they'll simply file an exact same initiative. They'll just change which bill it seeks to repeal. It'll say It's an initiative to repeal House Bill 1296, and they will immediately, as soon as it is signed into law, if that happens, they will immediately go about collecting signatures. And I think that in the course of a month, they'll be able to collect more than 500,000 signatures easy. So Democrats have a choice to make. Do we continue to push these deeply unpopular policies where we strip parents of their rights and their ability to know what's happening with their kids in school, all for it to just be overturned via an initiative? You have a decision to make. I mean, if you want to do that, go ahead. I don't know about you. I mean, Let's Go Washington's the one paying for it. But I would be more than happy to help with another initiative effort to keep parental rights intact. And if we have to show yet again that you guys put radical gender ideology ahead of the rights of parents, this is another opportunity to do that. So by all means, push through House Bill 1296 tomorrow, vote it off the floor, send it over to the Senate. The Senate can send it to Bob Ferguson and he can sign it, put his name to paper that he does not care about parental rights, and then we'll get busy with Let's Go Washington running yet at another initiative to protect parental rights in this state. So I dare you. But again, we'll send out an action alert so you can one more time let your elected leaders know ahead of decision day tomorrow how you feel about their continued attacks on parents. So one thing I want to talk, just because it's in the realm of parenting and stuff, it's really important. You know, there's bills we discussed this week. Yesterday's show was jam-packed with them that are just insane on the face, that are extreme on the face. Pay for striking workers. Reparations, where you're gifting people because of their skin color $100,000 so they don't have to cover the cost of a down payment on a home. I mean, there's bills that just the premise of the bill is asinine. But it's also important to know that even bills that seem like a good idea on their face can have really bad things buried in them. And that's why it's important to be involved, to read the bills, to have people out there who are reading the bills in the media, in new media, et cetera, and catching these things. Case in point. Senate Bill 5708, which we haven't talked about on the show before, and honestly, it's because it had bipartisan support. I mean, it sounds like a pretty good bill. Like, hey, we're going to protect kids online. There's a lot of threats to kids online, safety issues, issues with private information being captured by social media companies, etc. So it had a Republican co-sponsor on it, and I was like, okay, like that's probably a good bill. Except a few people spotted a really weird addition to that bill. Again, Senate Bill 5708. It says, if the online service, product, or feature allows the minor's parent, guardian, or any other individual or entity to monitor the minor's online activity or track the minor's location, provide an obvious signal to the minor when the minor is being monitored or tracked. Let me explain that to you in layman's terms. They want your kid to know if you're tracking their activity online. How crazy is that? So they are like packed into this bipartisan bill, Senate Bill 5708. Sorry, I've got a wrong thing up there, but it's Senate Bill 5708. A reasonable bill, but way down in like Section 4, Subsection C, it has a paragraph in there that's like, hey, if you're going to track your kid online, your kid deserves to know. Hell no, they don't. Hell no, they don't. My kid's doing something online. I mean, as a parent, you can make that decision, right? You can tell them, hey, I can see everything you do online. And then that would be kind of a warning to your child that maybe they shouldn't do shady stuff online or talk to strangers because you're watching. But a parent has every right in the world to not tell their kid and to track their kid online. I'm sorry, but your rights when you're a child are limited, in my opinion. So this is a good example of why it's important to notice these things and call them out, because a substitute version of this bill has just been filed, and guess what's missing? That paragraph is now removed. So that's a very good thing. I'll celebrate that. Again, it had bipartisan support. I'm sure the Republican who was on the bill didn't really, I would hope, hadn't seen that sort of paragraph that was put into it. And so now it's gone. So I think that's great. And if people hadn't noticed it and pointed it out, and it wasn't me, there were other people online who pointed it out, so I'm kind of to blame too. But if there weren't people who looked at this and said, ah, it's a good bill on the face, let's dig a little deeper into it, and then saw that they want to prohibit parents from secretly tracking their kids' online activity, then they would have pushed this bill forth, and that would then be law, and more rights from you as a parent would be stripped. So good example of how it's important to read the fine points, the fine details. All right. So speaking of all the crazy stuff that's happened this week, we have to add one more thing to the list. Rent control has passed in the House of Representatives. Does not give me a lot of faith for where this bill is heading. We're going to talk to Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington about what happens next. First, I want to remind you guys, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they're having a first 100 days live webinar coming up on March 20th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. He's going to talk about the first 100 days of the Trump administration. I'm sure you're seeing the meltdowns online like I am of, oh my God, the stocks and Donald Trump. My mom's very upset because she doesn't like Donald Trump as it is. And oh, I lost all this money. Well, look, okay, you know, stocks go up and down, people. They've always gone up and down. And I think they ended in a pretty good place at the end of Trump's first term in office. So like, take some deep breaths. But this is what Zach specializes in. And he's going to talk about this. He's going to talk about what's happening with the stocks, what you need to know about your retirement portfolio, where things are heading a little longer term, you know, certainly for 2025 and beyond. So this is totally free to attend. It's a good place to just ask your questions. Hey, look, if you're losing money in your retirement portfolio, I don't blame anyone who gets concerned about that. You only get one retirement, and especially if you're close to retirement, that would scare the heck out of me too. So you can join the webinar, register for free, and ask Zach Abraham all the questions you have. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. A little thing will pop up in the middle of the screen saying you can register for the webinar. KnowYourRiskRadio.com and catch a brand new episode of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham that's coming out tonight. Okay, so the House has approved rent control, and I've got to be honest, I mean, it seemed like this was the plan. Like day one of the legislative session, they gave rent control a hearing. I don't know that you give rent control a hearing day one unless you are very committed to trying to get rent control across the finish line. And that is what I have expressed about this. I mean, this to me is one of the most dangerous policies that's being pushed in Olympia this year because of just how devastating it will be to our entire economy. And it's also, I think, one of the most hypocritical bills being pushed this session. And it shows the true disconnect between, you know, when Democrats say, here's the problem. And they identify the problem, and then they push things that make that problem way worse and seemingly don't connect the two things. I mean, they say the housing crisis is one of the biggest issues facing our state. I mean, they lie and say that's what's contributing to homelessness, which just isn't true. That's a drug crisis. But look, housing is expensive. Rent is expensive. Buying a house is expensive. That's true. But then they go and they push and do all of these things that make it even more expensive, like the reparations bill we discussed. Now, when you go buy a home, you have to pay like $1,000 extra to the recorder's office because you're paying into a reparations program. So while they're complaining about the cost of buying a home, they're actively doing all these things that make buying a home much, much more expensive. And there's a million things I could add to that list. So rent control is going to do the same thing. First of all, rent control is absolutely going to scare any developers away from building new housing in Washington. Bob Ferguson, his goal of building hundreds of thousands of new units, it's not going to be possible. And then you're going to have people who right now have rental units, mostly smaller or mid-sized landlords, and they're going to say, I'm getting the heck out of here. I'm going to sell this property. If it's a single family home, I'm just going to sell it and some family's going to buy it to live in. So then the availability of rental units, I mean, this is just like basic economics. This is what's happened in rent control when it's been instituted in other places. And I don't know if Democrats are willfully blind to that, if they're just trying to like please the far left base. I don't know what's going on because it's so obvious that rent control will do the exact opposite of what they're trying to convince people that rent control will do. Now, in the interest of positive reinforcement, there were a couple Democrats, I believe three, right, who voted against it in the House. Not enough. But I'll give him credit for it. Thank you. So let's see. Representative Strom Peterson. Let's start with some Democrats who argued in favor of it. So this is Representatives Strom Peterson and Julia Reed arguing in favor of the rent control policy.
We are getting there. We are making incredible progress. But in the meantime, because of our lack of supply, the market is a little crazy, is a little wonky. And the people that are suffering are the people that are renting. The people that are suffering are the people that are seeing 20, 30, 40, 50% rent increases year after year.
What we haven't done, Madam Speaker, is much for stabilization. Liars. To help the thousands upon thousands of renters in our state who are just asking for a little regulation and predictability. As a landlord, I'm also asking for that, Madam Speaker.
Fine, then do it for your rental unit. Do it for your rental unit. Don't increase rents. And see how that, you know, as a matter of fact, Representative Reed never increased rent. That would be the right thing to do, right? You should drop rent, in fact. You should lose money on your rental unit. And this idea from Strom Peterson, who used to be reasonable, people are seeing 50% increases in your rent. Have you ever seen a 50% increase in your rent? And if you have, yeah, that sounds a little ridiculous to me. But that is absolutely the exception and not the rule. I rented for a long time in Seattle. I never experienced anything even remotely close to a 50% increase in rent. And also, all of that aside, rent control will not help that. Rent control will make it worse because, as we've discussed many times, if you cap it at 7% increases, they will do at every opportunity a 7% increase to hedge their bets. So you are basically guaranteeing yearly 7% increases for every renter in the state. Now, this was an interesting. Representative Sharon Santos, she represents like the Columbia City, Rainier Valley area. She voted against it. Okay, thank you. And I have never clapped for anything she does, so that's good job. But her speech was kind of weird because she's like, I'm glad it's passing, but I'm not voting for it.
I'm concerned about the impact of extraordinary rising costs on the ability of these landlords to maintain affordable housing units in my district and in yours, Madam Speaker. Insurance, utilities, contractors for maintenance and repairs and more capital improvements, and taxes are all rising. We know that the OIC noted that homeowners insurance increased by 24% last year, and the UTC just approved 12% increases in electricity for this year and 9.4% increases in gas. I am glad to see that this advances because I believe the state must continue to be vigilant about doing what it can to contain affordability, and because I believe housing is a human right. But today I will vote no.
That's interesting. Like, I'm glad it's passing, but I'm voting no. That's a weird position to take on it. But she outlines some of the cost increases that she knows, even she knows, and she's a fairly progressive member of the House Democratic Caucus, that even she knows are cost increases for landlords. And where does a cost increase for landlords go? Like increased cost of electricity and stuff. That goes to tenants, right? So even she sees that and she can do the math and say, okay, well, you know, capping rent increases might put landlords in a difficult situation, and then we're going to lose units. So three Democrats had the sense to vote against this. That's not enough. And so it is advancing over to the Senate. We asked Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington to talk about what happens next. Sean Flynn, not where we want to be, right?
No, yesterday was not the best day for the industry or the state. But, you know, hopefully, you know, there is some good news. Hopefully the Senate will take pause and really consider the larger impacts of this bill. You know, notably, the rent control bill did not go down on a strict party line vote. So some Democrats saw the light and realized that this was a bad bill. Hopefully there are more Democrats like that in the Senate so that we can preserve a little bit of sanity and our economy in the state.
Gosh, I mean, it's one of the worst things that could happen to the state, frankly. And it's so contrary to what they complain about, which is a truth, right? That housing costs are really high. So it's like, okay, you're going to do something that's going to make it even worse for renters. And it's hard to wrap your mind around the inability, it seems, to understand that. You had mentioned there was three Democrats who voted against it. We just played a cut from one of them, which was kind of interesting because she's like, I'm glad it's passing, but I'm not going to vote for it. How much work did you guys have to do behind the scenes to even get three Democrats to vote against it?
Well, you know, the RHA and the whole industry has been working hard to educate lawmakers on these issues. And it's difficult. And I think the clip that you played was Representative Santos.
Yeah.
And what's difficult about this issue is that there are real problems from the fact that we don't have enough supply. So when proponents of the bill say, yeah, but rent's really high, no one is disagreeing on that. We disagree on what the solution is. We all want housing to be more affordable in the state of Washington. What this bill does is the opposite of that, though. That's the problem. The problem isn't that the rent is too high. The problem is the fact that we believe that the solution to that is supply, supply, supply. The best way to keep rents down is a 10% vacancy rate. I mean, we need to look no further than Austin, Texas to prove that in real time. Year over year, rents in Austin, Texas are down 20%. Why? Because they built close to 50,000 units, new units. And that has forced rent down dramatically in Austin. And we should take a playbook out of that that city's policy and build, build, build. But we're not doing that. Instead, we're instituting a policy that's going to not only stop the creation of housing, it's going to chase existing housing away. And when you do that, and when you mess with the housing economy in the state of Washington, our estimates are looking at $9 billion that will add in lost tax revenue to the state budget. This bill is a catastrophe, not just for housing, but for the economy as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope what you said there, though, is the thing that I got to be honest, I don't have a lot of faith in the state Senate. I'll talk about that in a second. To me, I almost, and you've never heard me say this, Sean, I almost think that Bob Ferguson might be the saving grace on this one, because he's leaned so much in his campaign promise about all of the housing he wants to build. I'm hopeful someone's in his ear telling him, if you sign this into law, you will not be able to make good on that campaign promise, and we will not be able to build the number of new units that you have promised. But on the Senate side, so this goes over to the Senate. I was just there on Friday. I watched the Senate on a party line vote pass pay for striking workers, which I consider to be a very insane policy, a very, very fringe policy. I mean, even Gavin Newsom vetoed pay for striking workers in California. So am I wrong to not have a whole lot of faith that the Senate will see reason on this one?
Well, I'm hoping that the fringe bills are done in the Senate. What I'm hoping is that at this point, the dollars and cents of this makes a lot of sense to senators who, and remember, the Senate is supposed to be a more deliberative body, right? And what we're hoping here at RHA is that the Senate can see the math on this and realize that if they pass this, the rest of any policy goals that they're going to have, they won't have the money to do. It's not just about the housing that you're going to lose. It's also about those tax rev dollars. And all this, you know, the Senate has their own problems with their budget right now as well. So if, you know, if we want to build the number of housing units that our new governor has decided that, you know, the campaign promise of 200,000 units, there's no way that happens if this bill gets passed and the budget problems that we have now become permanent, because you will strip $9 billion out of the tax pots for the state. And I don't know how they make that money back up.
Yeah, gosh, I'm worried about this one. I mean, this will be such, it will dig our state into such a deep hole. I don't see how we recover from it. And I'm hopeful, like I share some hope that there are some, I think there are some reasonable Democrats in the Senate who have made good votes on other things, not the pay for striking workers. And so I'm hoping that they can see reason. I'm waiting for a leader to stand up, like among Washington State Democrats, and say, hey guys, we're taking things too far. And I just really haven't seen that. You know, I feel like we had the Senator Mark Mullett and the Senator Kevin Vandeweghe, and we underappreciated them while they were there. And I'm missing them very, very much right now. Yeah. I guess what would be, I know you're having messages with them behind the scenes, but what would be the message to senators who have yet to vote on this and to Governor Ferguson?
Well, I mean, as much as you may not like it, Brandy, maybe that leader is Bob Ferguson. Right? Maybe
hey, I will be nice to him, Sean. I'll be nice to him for a whole month if he vetoes rent control.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, Governor Ferguson, whether you agree with him or not, no one thinks he's not smart. In fact, everyone agrees he's generally the smartest guy in the room. And so we're hoping that he is that leader for us and for the state. You know, and again, coming back to Senator Mullett and Senator Vandeweghe, we did not appreciate them as much as we should have when they were in the Senate. And I think that with their departures, I think the leadership has yet to coalesce around a moderate voice in the Senate. And we're hoping that happens soon.
Yeah. And I will just say quick on that, you know, not to dwell on the past, but this is a lesson, I think, for Republican voters to get behind moderate Democrats in districts and in races where the Republican has no chance of winning. I think that's been a mistake that they've made. I think that to the extent possible, if you have races that are clearly going to be a D that comes out victorious, Republicans have to suck it up and support moderate Democrats, or we're going to continue to have policies like this pushed without much resistance in Olympia.
Yeah, I mean, RHA is a nonpartisan organization, yeah. And you know, I would say we, like you, we support sanity, yeah. Right? I don't care what party you are, if you can do math and understand that a policy is bad for the state, and in this case, bad for the resident and the housing provider, you're my candidate of choice. I think, to your larger point, is that the politics in the state of Washington have moved extreme in both directions. Right, to the point that it is difficult to speak reason to electeds in certain situations, and rent control is one of them. This rent control is a policy that no serious person should take seriously. It has failed in follow the science, right? It's failed in every jurisdiction it's ever been tried in, massively. The economists all agree. The economists agree on rent control the same way paleontologists agree on dinosaurs. You can't be pro dinosaur and pro rent control at the same time. The point is the science tells us the economics of rent control doesn't work. And if you're going to be the party that follows the science, you've got to say rent control doesn't work. Otherwise, you're not following the science.
Well, you could say, like, you can't be pro-dinosaur and pro-asteroid, you know?
Yeah,
it's like
totally,
the same thing, right?
For sure, right, yeah. And so, you know, you either believe the science or you don't. And science, the science of economics doesn't get to work and not work when it fits your political motives. And that's what's so dangerous about this bill, is that we may pass it, if it passes for political reasons, it's going to have real economic impacts on the lives of Washingtonians for a very long time.
I've got one. I'm going to throw it out there as a positive reinforcement. Yeah. I think Mike Chapman over in the Senate can be our sane champion. I've seen him take some reasonable votes. He's new to the Senate, came over from the House side, represents a blue-collar district out on the peninsula that would be dramatically impacted by this policy. So Chapman, we need you right now, buddy. We need you right now. Talk some sense into folks. All right, Sean Flynn. Hey, we appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going to happen here. Look, if Bob Ferguson is the one who ultimately vetoes it, I will give Bob Ferguson all the credit in the world for that. I think one of the things that we've talked a lot about is that Bob Ferguson looks out for Bob Ferguson. So if he thinks it's important for his political career to kill rent control because he wants to make good on his campaign promise to be able to build a bunch of new housing units, then at the end of the day, like, I would support Bob Ferguson in looking out for his own political career to try to avoid utter disaster in the state of Washington. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at RHA. We do a segment with them on housing every week, really building up to what we knew was going to be the eventuality that they try to push through rent control. As you know, RHA is down there fighting for landlords every single day, landlords who are small to mid-size, who have a few units, and they're just trying to stay afloat. So if you're not a member of RHA, sign up today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right. Daryl came in yesterday and Daryl was like, oh, Brandy, people are being real mean to you on Reddit. And I said, oh, show me. And he's like, no, I don't want to hurt your feelings. They're being real mean to you on Reddit. And he was so sweet because Daryl cared about, you know, my mental well-being. And I was like, Daryl, I've been doing this job for a long time. There are very few things that could be said about me that haven't been said about me already, and it takes a lot to hurt my feelings. I will say, though, Seattle Redditors believe that I should die because I have the audacity to point out the extreme agenda of Washington Democrats. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. I just have fun with this. And I think it shows that, like, you, how do I even put this? I'm saying a fact, okay? It's a fact. It's not in dispute. So as we discussed on the show, and as we broke the news on the show, now 28 Washington State Senate Democrats are pushing a constitutional amendment that would result in allowing abortions up to birth in Washington State and gender surgeries for kids of any age in Washington state with no restrictions whatsoever and no parental consent or notice. That's just a fact. Again, I'm not really here to debate it with anyone. Now, does the constitutional amendment say that? Does it spell those things out? No, but that's the point. The constitutional amendment, as I've now explained twice on the show, is so vague that it calls these things fundamental rights that the government shall not deny or interfere with. So in the wording of the constitutional amendment that they're pushing, it renders all the other restrictions that already exist for those things in state law unconstitutional. And all it would take is one legal challenge for them to be rendered irrelevant. And so then the law of the land in Washington state would be you can get abortions up to birth. There's no restrictions whatsoever on gender surgeries or gender care. So you could be an eight-year-old and you could go in for a gender reassignment surgery because your teacher convinced you you're a girl, and you could, and your parents would never know about it. Like, this is extreme, extreme stuff. So I pointed that out now twice on the show. Well, Seattle Reddit did not like it. They did not like it one bit. And they think I should die, or rather that I should be aborted post-birth 36 years later because I am daring to point out truths about the Washington State Democratic Party. Here's the thread on Reddit. Has since been deleted. I don't know why they deleted it. Brandi Cruz spreading more lies online. She really needs to shut the F up. Okay, that's direct, right? That's direct. And look, there are some things in here that are pretty disgusting, but I have to laugh at them because, again, we're talking about like how Democrats are so extreme and they just prove it by the way that they react to just legitimate stories about what Democrats are doing. So in their effort to prove they're not extreme, they say things like, I thought Dory Monson was dead when he died. I would like him to be dead again. Brandy's mom hired me to abort her yesterday. All the Democratic senators stood by and applauded her mom's bravery. In Brandy's case, I support post-birth abortion. There are quite a few people who upvoted that one. So they think I should die for pointing out that Democrats want to allow abortions up to birth. It's interesting also because I am pro-choice, not that that matters to any of the raging leftists who are angry online, but I am certainly not pro-choice up to the point of birth unless there is some serious issue with the life of the mother, which our law already allows for. But this was also this fascinating insight into how the minds of leftists work. Because it was like, she's lying, this is not happening, she deserves to die. And then it says, I don't like what she's saying, so now I'm trying to report her post so she gets deplatformed because I don't want her to be able to say these things. There was a, I reported the post as supporting a hate group, which was just like, that doesn't seem relevant to the post. They didn't do anything about it, of course, but it still brought me a tiny smile in these dark times nonetheless. Jason Domber, here's the downside. You can't report her for disinformation because that's not a thing on Facebook, Twitter, or anything anymore. But on the plus side, you can't call her horrible names and not get banned for bullying. So I think that's a plus. So the plus side is they can call me horrible names and not get banned for bullying, which, you know, I'm all fine with. I've been called horrible names before. But here's the piece de resistance. So it's like, Brandy's a liar. She's lying. She deserves to die. She's lying. Let's deplatform her. And then the best part is they're like, even if she weren't lying, we actually do support that. So all these Redditors were like, okay, even if she's not lying and Democrats do support abortion up to birth, so do we. So we actually think that's pretty cool. There was a few who were like, God, I wish Democrats were that based. Which senators? I want to make donations. Based. List their names. I'm going to go on a donation train. Lies? What do you mean? Our whole agenda is wanting every woman to receive an abortion at 40 weeks and every five-year-old to undergo sex change surgeries. Which maybe they were being sarcastic. But that is their entire agenda. There were so many comments on there. They were like, Brandy's a horrible person for saying this. I hope she dies. But even if it is true, we actually do support abortions up to birth. And that's a really based agenda for the Democrats. So it just totally tells on themselves. I also had to say, Nicole, the one thing that did hurt my feelings that Daryl was correct about.
Uh-oh.
They made fun of my hair and makeup.
Oh.
First of all, I'm not a supermodel. I'm not going to be the next Miss Universe.
No blows.
But my hair and my makeup are flawless. I think the real problem is my hair isn't purple, pink, or Blue.
That's probably it.
And then as far as my makeup, I'm not androgynous enough for them.
There you go.
They want everyone to look completely sexless. They want everyone to look like a they them. And I'm just not quite hitting that mark for them.
Although I think they just know that's going to get you. Those are the ones that bother you the most.
Well, it's like when you can't debate on the merits, it's like, let's attack her appearance. It doesn't bother me because I know that my makeup's literally flawless. And my hair is the only thing I have going for me. So I just love it because I'm thinking about what these Redditors look like. And you just know that they're 200 pounds overweight, nose piercing, hair shaved on one side with a pink comb over. Mm-hmm. Wear black and go out burning Teslas.
Oh, is it a green jacket?
And you cannot tell if it's a he, she, they, or them.
Right.
So I just love that because I know those are the people who are criticizing my hair and makeup.
Yeah.
For sure.
The ones that don't do their hair and makeup.
Yeah. Or it's some real thick eyeliner.
Yeah.
Sorry, my mama hurts me.
It's a weird hobby.
I was trying to think of a really goth emo song.
Oh, you got me.
Okay. But I used to love the goth emo songs.
But yeah, it's a weird thing to just sit on Reddit all day and complain about things and people and just throw out these kind of insults. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. Go away. Go do weird, something productive with your life.
It gives me great fodder for my show. And you know the best part of this is, because there was a few people on there like, just ignore her, you know, she'll wither and die was one of them. The best... No, I won't, because I assumed you were ignoring me anyway. but the best part about this is I'm going to come up with a snazzy headline for this segment. I'm going to put it on YouTube, and it'll probably make me a couple $1,000. So
yeah.
Thank you, Reddit. Thank you, Reddit trolls from your parents' basements for helping me make money. I really appreciate it. Good stuff. And yeah, I don't think you can abort someone 36 years later. I think that would just be murder.
I'm pretty
even sure. For the Democrats, they're not even supporting abortion at 36 years post-birth.
I don't even think you can do that in Minnesota.
Yeah, not even in Minnesota. Certainly not in Washington State. Yet, we might be getting there. All right. Unbelievable. So we, several weeks ago now, Nicole, when you have time, will you look at the date that we first talked about this? It had to be, have been several weeks ago. You don't have to do it now, but like long time. Several weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, on this show, we talked about the utter cronyism taking place right now at Sound Transit, about how Dow Constantine is leaving his job as King County executive, and he is very likely going to be appointed as the next CEO of Sound Transit. And he's going to collect a big fat paycheck of like $650,000 a year. And we described in detail how that's the definition of cronyism. How Dow Constantine, not only do you get a seat on the board when you're the King County executive, but you get to appoint the county's delegation to the board. So he's been in office now for almost 16 years. So damn near everyone on the board has been appointed by Dow Constantine. So over 16 years, he's done a crap job as a King County executive and as a board member for Sound Transit, which can't finish anything on time or on budget. And he gets rewarded because he stacked the deck in his favor. His appointees are now going to hand him a $650,000 a year job. So we reported on this several weeks ago. Well, I'm happy to report to you that the rest of the media has finally caught up. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So we covered this weeks ago. And, you know, we posted it everywhere. It's not like it was a secret this was going on. You know, Sound Transit is conducting its next CEO search in secrecy, but it's been an open secret that Dow Constantine wants the job, that Dow Constantine was in the top five finalists for the job. And even the far lefty, like, bike blogs were calling foul on this. And they were saying, like, that is kind of shady, right? He's appointed all these people to the board, and now he gets to turn around and have those board members hand him the keys to Sound Transit and to not only a $650,000 a year job. We're in the process right now of asking the state exactly how his pension would stack up. But if I ballpark it for you, after his time as King County executive, and then if he spends a couple years as CEO of Sound Transit, his pension, he'll get to retire with his state pension that will exceed how much the governor of the state of Washington gets paid every year. he'll probably have a cool $250,000 pension from the state of Washington. So not only are they handing him a few years of a $650,000 job that he does not deserve, but they're also setting him up for success for the rest of his life with a big fat pension from the state. I'm working on what the exact figure would be. So we cover that. And finally, the media seems to be awoken to this, despite the fact that I'm told as early as this week, Sound Transit could be making his final decision. So now we're at the finish line and the media finally wants to say something. I'll accept it. So the Seattle Times published this op-ed: take the secrecy out of hiring of Sound Transit CEO. And then the Everett Herald turned around and published a very similar view: open Sound Transit CEO hiring to public review. One finalist is known, the King County executive. All finalists should make their pitch to the public. And I agree with that sentiment. I don't know why a position as significant as Sound Transit CEO would be done in secrecy. Like, look, I understand part of it where it's like, well, these finalists have jobs elsewhere, and if they reveal that they're gunning for this job, then there could be a problem in their current jobs. That's fine, but that's part of being like a job search for a public entity. That's part of that. So if you want to go for that job, you have to know that people are going to probably find out about it, and you have to be okay with that. And the public deserves to know and to vet these candidates and to know something about them and to have all of the dirty laundry out. And with Dow Constantine, there should be a robust public debate over whether that level of clear cronyism is acceptable. I mean, there are very few things that the far left, the center, and the right in Seattle ever agree upon. And this seems to be one of them, that appointing Dow Constantine to that position stinks to high heaven. Even Como News did a story about this and covered sort of one of the meetings and the pushback from the far left and the transit groups.
Sound Transit Board Chair Dave Summers, the Snohomish County executive, admitting that the agency is considering Dow Constantine as the new CEO.
Are you willing to defend that position to state and federal auditors? How about legislators?
The voice of David Scott of Seattle Subway, the transit advocacy organization, echoed in the empty chamber what he also said in this letter, suggesting the King County executive, a current Sound Transit board member, presents a massive conflict of interest. You see, Constantine appointed half the board to their positions and is now asking them to hire him.
Yeah. So look, I'm glad Chris Daniels and Como did that. I'm glad the Herald published something. I'm glad the Times published something. Nicole found the date. We covered all this on February 18th, almost a month ago. Where has the media been? And now, so what happened earlier this week is there's these rumors behind the scenes, and I'm sure people were reaching out to the Seattle Times, to the Everett Herald, to Como News, and freaking out because they heard that Dow Constantine's appointment was imminent, that it could happen as early as tomorrow. And so then it's like, oh, we better jump on the bandwagon and push back against this. Now it's probably too late. As opposed to if everyone had at the beginning of this said, that's really shady, and done their job and reported on it, we could have killed Dow. And it is my goal, but it doesn't have to be the news media's goal. Like, we're opinion. It doesn't have to be the goal of a journalist like Chris Daniels to run a story to kill Dow Constantine's appointment, but to shed light on it and to let the public know, hey, here's what's happening. And the Seattle Times and the Everett Herald, like, he appointed all these people. Now they're going to appoint him. He's going to get a salary of $650,000 a year. He's going to have a pension of $250,000 for the rest of his life. Are you okay with that? Letting the public know what's happening. And instead, we wait to the last minute when he's all but been guaranteed the job, and now we are hoping and praying that they're going to yank it back. I think the damage has been done. But the other thing on top of all of this, and it's the point we made back on February 18th and in a couple shows after that, he is the worst person for this job. He has put King County into a budget crisis to the point where they now have to cut money from public safety. That's when you know you're in a budget crisis. So he has failed King County. Homelessness is worth any major barometer of success in his 16 years, four terms in office. Homelessness is much worse, even though he declared a homeless state of emergency years ago. Homelessness is much worse. Crime is up. Substance abuse and deadly overdoses up, up. Housing costs way up. Not to mention, he's been sitting on the Sound Transit board in his capacity as the King County executive,
And how has Sound Transit fared? It's been one of the most corrupt, faulty, incompetent public agencies ever. Ever. They cannot finish anything on time or on budget. Complete lack of transparency. So now you've got a guy who's failed in his job for the last 16 years, is leaving the county worse off than when he found it, and has also failed on the board to hold Sound Transit and its current CEO accountable for all its failures, and now you want to hand him the keys to the kingdom? That's nuts. That's nuts. Even if, and I don't remember who it was, so we reached out, Nicole, you reached out to all of the candidates for King County Executive. And it's John Wilson, Claudia Balducci,
yep,
and Girmay Zahalai. So Claudia and Girmay, they're on the Sound Transit board as well. They were who were they appointed by? Dow Constantine. So John Wilson, he's supposed to be the more moderate option for King County Executive. So I thought for sure, because what we wanted to know is, you're running for Dow's job. Do you think this is a conflict of interest? Do you think this is cronyism? And would you, after your time as King County Executive, if you win, would you try to pursue a job as Sound Transit CEO? Is now King County Executive just going to be the launching pad for a $650,000 a year job? So we didn't hear back from Claudia or Girmay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Claudia Balducci, Girmay Zahalai, they don't want to be on the record on that at all. We did hear back from John Wilson, and I've got to say I was disappointed. He said he didn't have a problem with it.
He would, he said, but I do believe that we should take a look at how the board is constituted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And consider some portion of seats being directly selected as by the people to ensure direct accountability and diversity of opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that we should have all these political appointees who can then turn around and appoint the politician to the chief job. I thought John Wilson would say he's not in support of it. So that kind of surprised me there. But again, you have these lefty bike groups, blogs and stuff. You have me. I'm different in Seattle. If you drop me anywhere else in the country, moderate, Seattle, right wing. I absolutely 100% am right wing when it comes to Seattle. And we all agree that this like stinks to high heaven, but they're going to do it anyway because they can. And what are the consequences for it? And then Claudia Balducci and Girmay Zahalai, they want Dow Constantine's endorsement. So they're running and gunning for that because he's either going to give it to Claudia or Girmay. So you think they're going to come out and speak out against Dow Constantine getting handed this lucrative job and a big fat pension? Of course not, because they're trying to run for his job. Oh my God, I can't even believe that this is even a conversation that we're having. The word cronyism was invented for just such a situation as this. And shame on the media for taking way too long to cover this story. It was an obvious scandal the first time we heard about it, and it should have been in the news every single day since. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends. Maybe a little too saucy of a segment for our friends over at Future 42. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action. At future42.org, make sure while you're there you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Oh, I love this. Nicole found a great picture for our First Mark Insurance read. Mm-hmm. So I talk about First Mark Insurance all the time. You need to do the First Mark Challenge. Literally, you could save thousands of dollars a year and it doesn't cost you anything. It's sort of a no-brainer. But we hear all these stories from undivided viewers and listeners who finally give in and take the First Mark Challenge. And Chad says that he had gone to First Mark for his car. We've read his comment on the show before. Remember, he's the one who told us that First Mark saved him $100 a month for his pet insurance because he has a service dog named Sergeant. And First Mark said, hey, this is our first pet insurance policy ever. But First Mark does it all. And in his case, for Chad, they fit a need that he had. They saved him $100 a month, $1,200 a year. Chad sent us a picture. Look at him. Oh, my goodness.
How precious.
Look at Sergeant.
Oh, I want one.
Oh, those dogs are, because that's just a shepherd, right? That's a full-on shepherd, right? They are energetic.
So smart.
Oh, my goodness. So smart. And so smart. So Chad shared with us the picture of Sergeant and making sure that Sergeant has insurance. First Mark saved him over $100 a month. I love that. That's just such a unique story. That's great. Okay, and we have another good First Mark story we'll do on the show tomorrow
because
we have a follow-up with someone else. But anyway, we hear a lot of stuff from undivided viewers and listeners about First Mark, the money they saved, the exceptional service they got. So take the First Mark challenge today, even if you don't have a dog like Sergeant that you need to insure. Should I insure Lucky? She's a prized cow.
I don't think it'd be very expensive.
Excuse me? Okay, no.
She's
precious.
Excuse
me? Why would you say that?
Why would you say that? You haven't put a lot of money into training.
I'm about to cry. She's like, look, she's beautiful.
I mean, my cats are insured.
Wait, so your cats are insured.
But it's not expensive is what I'm saying.
I can't even talk to you right now. Don't even look at me. Don't even look at me. FirstMortgageInsurance.com, they work for you. That's the meanest thing she's ever said to me. Lucky's a one-of-a-kind beast.
Emotional support animal.
Oh, my God. I'm getting into national news. Let's skip a few things here because we're a little late on the show today. We got a taping. Let's skip. We'll do it tomorrow. I want to talk about the Karen Bass story just because we had it on the show tomorrow. We went a half hour over.
Yesterday.
So I'm so flustered from your insult of my animal. I can't think. People are going to agree with me. I know you guys always side with Nicole, but that was mean, right? So CHOP 2.0 happening down in California. So you remember when CHOP happened here, of course, and all the public officials' text messages just vanished into thin air. Police chief, police commanders, the mayor, anyone who had anything to do with any of the decision-making around CHOP, their text messages just went away. And there were all sorts of different excuses about it, but let's be honest, that was some shady, shady stuff. So guess what's happening down in LA with Mayor Karen Bass and the wildfires that happened while she was in Ghana? Well, her text messages are nowhere to be found from the Los Angeles Times. Why is Mayor Karen Bass deleting her text messages? Very similar. So they basically had requested text messages from when she was in Ghana to see what was going on. And this is, I think, as any journalist would have requested this. Like, she's in Ghana while the city's burning down. So they're requesting her text messages. They get the PDRs back. I don't know what they call it in California. And there's no text messages. So they're thinking, well, either she wasn't texting anyone while the city's burning down, which is problematic, or she's deleted her text messages. And the office says that the text messages weren't intentionally deleted. Very similar to what Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan said at the time during CHOP. What was her excuse? The phone was set to auto-delete after a certain period of time. And that is the excuse that Karen Bass is using now from the LA Times. Her phone is set to not save text messages, said her lawyer, David Michelson. Michelson said that there is no requirement that a city official or employee save text messages, despite the fact that the city's own document retention policies dictate that most records should be kept for at least 2 years. Under state law, any writing, quote, related to the conduct of government is deemed a public record. Yeah, and that's just, anyone knows that. Anyone in elected office knows that you have to retain documents, that people can request them via public disclosure, and that your text messages on a city-issued cell phone are absolutely relevant and public records. So why does this keep happening? And why is it the exact same excuse? I don't know about you guys, but I do feel like you have to intentionally go into your iPhone settings to say delete after 30 days.
Oh, yeah.
Because at one point I did that because I would just get, oh, my gosh, the text messages were just filling up my phone and my storage. I don't have to retain my text messages. I'm not an elected official. So you have to make a conscious decision to either delete individual messages or to go in and change your settings on your phone not to retain your messages. Or, and I think maybe there's another explanation, or she's using a personal cell phone to get around public records laws and is using her personal cell phone to conduct city business. If I were a reporter in LA, and maybe they already have, I would request any relevant text messages sent to or from her personal cell phone to see if it yields anything. But why is it? It's because they don't want to be held responsible. And really, what was the consequence in Seattle for that? I mean, virtually nothing except kind of a stain on their reputation. You know, and there was lawsuits and stuff, but they don't pay that out personally. No, there was a lawsuit, I think the Seattle Times brought about a lawsuit and some other entities over the missing messages over CHOP. But it's not like the mayor has to pay that out of her pocket or the police chief or the police commanders or anything like that. So what's the consequence? Nothing. Except, oh, people remember that you deleted your text messages or failed to retain
them. It's interesting, though, that this might be the first time that it comes up, because maybe they'll change that if it's come up before and there would be some knowledge of that. But it's the media doing its job down there if no one's ever requested her text messages before or anybody else's to get around that rule.
But I'm sure they have. And so they could probably say, hey, we got her text messages for this. She didn't delete those. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But it sounds, I mean, it's exactly what happened in Seattle. Mm-hmm. It is exactly what happened in Seattle. Down to the excuse, right? It's just insane. Okay, let's get to a couple comments. Diana, oh, actually, should we do our daily subscriber show poll? I kind of skipped over
it. Let's do it.
So this came up. So when I was in Olympia on Friday, I thought of this and I had kind of tweeted it out passively, seeing what people thought. And I wanted to poll you guys on it today. So they're passing things in the middle of the night. This happened last legislative session with the gas ban. Remember, they brought the bill to move toward a ban on natural gas to the floor at 2 a.m. Something as consequential as that. And then they debated this permit to purchase a firearm bill until the wee hours of the morning, took a break, and then came back the next day. So to me, I don't believe they should be allowed to do that. I mean, maybe in a short session. So we have short and long sessions in the legislature. This is a long session. They have 4 months to get their business done. Why should they be debating things at midnight or 2 a.m? Either that's poor time management, or more likely, they don't want the public to see what they're doing. I mean, on Friday when they debated the, what was it they debated Friday pretty late in the evening? I can't remember what it was. But it's a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it the nighttime, but it's a Friday when the news media isn't even there and they're not even covering it. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, should they be allowed to do this? Should state lawmakers be prohibited from voting and or debating bills too late at night or too early in the morning? Nicole, yay or nay?
Well, I definitely think they should be prohibited from voting. Debating, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it's pointless anyway because they all have their minds set right now.
Right.
But yeah, for sure from voting, because I just think it's ridiculous. That's just bad. Poor time management, and let's get rid of some of the stupid bills. Let's do a limit on how many bills you can
100%
sponsor so that we don't have all these stupid bills and then they're there till that time at night or whatever. Yeah.
The only argument, and I'll get to some subscriber comments on this, one of the downsides I could see happening, let's say you limit it and you can't debate or vote on bills after 9 p.m. or before 9 a.m., mm-hmm. which sounds reasonable to me, is that Democrats would then say, oh, well, we're going to shut down debate because remember, they changed the rules where now it only takes a simple majority to end debate. Where for like 100 years, it had been that you need a 2/3 vote, I think, to end debate. So now Democrats did away with that old rule. So now whenever they don't like what Republicans are saying, they can just say end debate.
Mm-hmm.
So what I could see them doing if you limit the time is they could say, oh, sorry, we're going to end debate because we've got a schedule, right?
Oh, yeah, they will.
So I could kind of see that happening, which might be a downside.
Well, like I said, it's they're not willing to listen anyway. They're not listening.
Right, exactly.
Even when we had people testifying and I was watching some of the testimonies that were going on, and the Democrats aren't even looking at the people.
No,
they're not even looking. They're not interested in hearing what anybody has to say. They've got their minds made up.
Yeah, I don't know that they go to the floor and they're like, oh, I was really swayed by that. And I think that's true.
Now, I think that there's things behind the scenes that they might be researching, and that's how we've got some Democrats to go over on rent control, things like that. But I don't think that a Republican speaking on the floor is, I don't think they're paying attention at all.
Yeah, and I don't know about paying attention, but I don't think for Republicans it sways minds either.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no.
I think because they have the caucus, they've decided where are we going to go.
Made a decision.
Now there is some. So you saw this yesterday if you look closely, if you watch back the show yesterday, remember that Republicans introduced that amendment to ban sex offenders from getting the reparations, right? And what you see the yes or no votes, and they're kind of going up and down. So what happens on the floor is there's a calculation that happens where Democrats who are in not super safe districts, they're always making mental calculations and the caucus is helping them do it. Can you keep your seat and take this vote? Mm-hmm. So they might say yes, but then if there's enough wiggle room, they can quick change their vote to no, and it helps them in their district. So what they're doing is they're constantly like, they have that planned out. How many votes do we need and we're safe? And then we can let the Democrats in a swing district make a vote that might be more helpful when they campaign. So that's why you saw when we put up on the screen the vote totals. Mm-hmm. That's why you saw the no's go up and down and up and down, because they were trying to figure out who can we save from making a vote to give $120,000 gifts to sex offenders to make a down payment on their home. Let me see here. Most of you are saying no or yes, that they should be banned from during late hours or early morning debating or voting. SLK9 on Locals says, seems real suspect. I agree. And it is real suspect. They're not
the
debating.
Whole process is.
They're not debating mutually agreeable things at 2 a.m. Come on. Yeah. Chris, they do it to keep people from seeing what they're doing, 100%. Weisscastle says, Brandy, I voted yes, but I do think there are alternatives to prohibition. Yeah, you could maybe say like something that's budget related or whatever it is. Or if you're maybe the final day of cutoff, like tomorrow's a big cutoff day. Right. So final day before a cutoff, you can debate until whenever. Like there's no limitations, mm-hmm. right? But leading up to that, you can't do things like that. Woody, especially because they sneak these insane commie bills mm-hmm. to bend the public over. Especially because they sneak these insane commie bend the public over bills in before we can stop them. Yes. Cap Tom, late at night, etc., smacks of trying to hide something. I agree. Mm-hmm. And especially on a Friday. That is the definition of trying to bury things in the news. I'll do a couple from Patreon. Brian, bastards. Danny J, absolutely. Additionally, if we limited the number of bills each lawmaker can sponsor, they would have no problem getting the work done. I agree. It should be.
If you can't drunk text an ex at 2 a.m. on Friday, then you can't vote.
But you can drunk text an ex at 2 a.m. on a Friday, unfortunately.
You should ask that you could set your phone so that you couldn't.
Like, don't let me text this person after 2 a.m.
Text after a certain time.
That's smart. Not that I've ever done that. I'll drunk text my husband when I was in Boston, out with my friend Johnny in Boston. And of course, we went, you know, out pretty late. And I'm texting my husband. I don't care what time it is back home, you know, because I've had two drinks and that's a lot for me. I just got to tell him that I love him. Anyway, all right, where are we at in the show? Comments. Okay, we'll get to show comments next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home this year, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Reach out to a few real estate agents. Wes doesn't care because he knows that when you hear what they have to offer and you hear what he has to offer, you're going to say, I want to sell my home with Wes. So Wes has been doing this for a long time. He's been through the ups and downs in the real estate market. He knows what it takes to make your home stand out. And he also knows that right now is a great time to list. So some might assume that the real estate market is slow, but the issue is low inventory. It's not low buyer demand. Demand is really high. So that means if you have a home that's prepared for sale and it's priced right, there are going to be a ton of people lining up to see it and to make you offers. But again, as long as it's prepared for sale and for listing, and as long as it's priced right. And Wes Jones and his team can help you with that. They've got something awesome called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where they come in, they help you figure out what kind of cosmetic upgrades you might be able to make to your home. They can even arrange it so you pay for those upgrades at closing. It's really cool stuff. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He says March and May are going to be really good months of the year to list your home. So if you're thinking about it, now is the time to act. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. And you better, Nicole, if there are comments saying that your statement about my dog Ramin, you better put them in there because you're the keeper of the comments. And I know that when there's comments saying Nicole's right, you're real quick to put those comments in. But critical comments of Nicole, somehow I never see those. Let's see. No, I know you love my dog.
I do love your dog.
I know you love my dog.
But it's funny because most people, I mean.
What?
They've just said, you know, Nicole getting feisty. That's, you know, that's not really an insult. It's not a disagreement. But I did throw in a comment for
my dog is literally the most precious thing on the planet. I just look at her.
I saw
and
your
I'm
picture
like, how
last
could
night.
Anything
that was a good one.
Give me this much joy? I'm sure if I have a child, people are always like, whenever I do that, I'm like, wow, maybe I should be a mom if I'm this obsessed with my dog. All right.
If only I could post pictures of my cat without being called a crazy cat lady.
Your cats are adorable.
I know. People love to see pictures of my cats.
Your cats are.
If I post them, they'd have a different opinion of me.
It is true. You know, it's kind of discriminatory.
It really is.
It's not fair. It's not fair. I agree. Diana Noble, thank you for all you do. You're welcome. There is so much cronyism within and outside surround transit. The very legislation that created this organization is questionable, not to mention the budget overruns. With the budget for ST3 at $54 billion, this should be the largest or one of the largest publicly funded projects in the world, if not the country. And it's still not completed. To have Dow at the helm would be a failure of leadership by the board to be sure they hire the best CEO. I agree. I mean, he's not qualified for the job on paper, but if you look into his background, he has performed very poorly. Why would you give that guy the job other than he gave you your job, so now you feel like you got to scratch his back. Baron, $5 super chat, found a great house in Squim, Ocean View, 2 acres, 3 years old. I refuse to pay someone else's down payment, so guess I'm looking in Idaho on a lake. FWA. That's the thing with the reparations. Mm-hmm. You're paying into a reparations program whether you like it or not when you're trying to pay for your own freaking home purchase. And they're going to cut checks to people because of skin color and no proof that they were discriminated against. And so now at closing, when you're filing that stuff, I mean, you know, you bought a home.
Mm-hmm.
Mike bought our home before Although I met him. So thanks, babe.
So many things yeah. you have to sign, though.
But it's like at the end, you feel I'm going to guess you feel financially crushed. You know, your bank account's like zero because right. you put out the down payment. Mm-hmm. And then every time you turn around, it's a new fee. It's like, yep. you got to do this. So this is the very end of that process. And they give an old screw you. And you got to give $1,000 to the recorder. And you don't even, most people don't even know what it's for. Mm-hmm. They see, oh, the Covenant Home Ownership Program. Well, that sounds harmless. Literally reparations. So all that hard work you did to save for your down payment, someone else doesn't have to do it. And they just get it for free. Because literally the pigmentation of their skin is correct. I always think of that Family Guy episode where it's like, Family Guy actually would be pretty offensive in today's terms, but it was like a skin chart and the police are checking for terrorists. And so they hold up the skin tone thing and they're like, okay, you're fine. You're fine. Oh, you're not. And it's literally, they're over there like, oh, let's see, skin uh-huh. chart, free down payment for you. Man, mm-hmm. not you, too light. It's just ridiculous. It's oh my God. Wild, and if I were an Asian or Jewish person, I'd be pissed because right. they were discriminated. I mean, people got put in internment camps, right? So they exclude all of these groups where if it's about discrimination, you would have to include them, but they don't. Mm-hmm. It's wild.
I think we're taxed and feed to death around here. And so it doesn't get noticed. And that's what they're banking on is that people just let it go because they're so used to getting taxed and feed, you know, yeah. to death. So
gosh, it's insane. Papa Woody, those alerts and quick links are so awesome, as are you guys, Brandy. Yeah, when we have an action alert to put out, there's been sort of some lull, but we'll put out one after the show today. Nicole will remind me.
Okay,
thanks. Because otherwise I'll forget to put out an action alert on the parental rights 1296. Samantha Olson, schools can withdraw from the WIAA. That's optional. Maybe it's time to encourage schools to not renew with the WIAA next year. But would that preclude them from competing against other schools? So wouldn't that hurt their athletes?
Probably.
I mean, yeah, that's a tough thing to do.
It's a tough thing. It's kind of like the teachers union, although that might be a little bit easier. But you still, then it puts more harm on the people
on the
trying
students,
to
right?
stand up for something.
Yeah, it's not fair. We got to protect kids from this. And adults have to make these decisions. And clearly, Chris Reichdahl is not going to be the adult who mm-hmm. makes those decisions. Hucklepick and Bear says the evil is not concerned ever. Evil is seeking to weaken. Country guy, I'm sure rent control will sail through the Senate and we can all sit back and watch the rental market dry up. It's going to be so bad, you guys. I mean, it's going to be so bad. Crafty Grandma Crispy, I haven't heard from you in forever. How many times can I email my reps on the same bill? I feel worn down and ignored, but I will keep on keeping on because Travis Couture and others keep fighting. That's the spirit. I don't think there's a limit. I don't know if it would be, unless it's been a while since you emailed them on a bill, you could keep emailing them about it, I guess. And then Papa also says they're jealous because their women are bald and their men have ponytails. Like I said, I'm just not androgynous enough for them.
That's probably it.
I'm too mm-hmm. feminine. But come on, who's making yep. fun of this hair? Like I said, it's my one redeeming quality. So that's how I know they're just full of it. They're grasping at straws. Chuck says, what is this, Nicole? Nicole's just saying what we're all thinking. That's rude. Of course you'd put that in there. Matt says, shame on you, Nicole. I agree.
And then laughy faces.
Denise, moms are blinded to their kids' flaws. Nicole would know. What does that mean?
I love Lucky. She is very moody. She's one of the more moody dogs that I know.
She has a full personality.
Out on you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you don't, you know, open the door for her, she's like,
she'll punch you.
She'll hold you.
She literally physically punches. Like, yeah, I have these bruises. She does. I have a bruise right now from Lucky yeah. right here. I have like really, I'm really weak.
That's
I bruise
a big
easy.
Bruise from her.
And I have scratches. She does this thing where she straight punches. And it hurts so bad because it's like, pet me or I'll physically yeah. abuse you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's but still, I love her, obviously.
She is a more moody one.
Don't tell her we said anything about her. I'm scared.
Beat when
scared.
You get home.
Ryan, thanks for putting this one in. Brandy, you're beautiful, smart, and funny. That makes you a triple threat.
There you go.
Thanks.
See?
I appreciate that. The Redditors, you know, they're cruel. But again, I'd like to see what any one of those Redditors looks like. I would really like to see that. What do we got next? Closing sanity check?
Yep.
Okay, so. Let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. You know, I try to avoid The View when I can, but this one was just too insane to ignore. Whoopi Goldberg just doesn't see the big deal with letting boys compete against girls.
When you come in and you say, oh, you know, these are men, you know,
competing against women,
you're assuming that the women are weak and just can't do anything except be here. Have you seen female athletes? They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what's going on or why this is an issue.
Did you hear that, girls? If you stand up for yourself, it makes you weak, according to Whoopi Goldberg. That has been our sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We sure do appreciate it. A special thank you to all of our paid subscribers who help support our show and our mission. If you have not signed up to support Undivided already, you can pay $5 a month, get access to our exclusive show, Sundays with Subscribers, where we do in-depth conversations on interesting topics that are going undercovered elsewhere in the media. You can also participate in our daily show polls, which I think is a lot of fun. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPOD.com, and just click on the link. It says support the show for $5. Just click right there. It makes it super easy. All right. I don't even know what day it is. I don't know what else. What day is it? Tuesday? Okay, yeah. I will see you tomorrow. Okay. All right, bye. Anything, Nicole? Any apologies you want to end the show with?
Nah, I got nothing.
No apologies you want to end the show with? Nothing? No? I'm giving you a chance. There's like 10 seconds left in the musical thing.
I speak truth.
Holy shit. That's just harsh. Okay.